This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The American Cancer Society this month celebrated its 100th anniversary. It has seen remarkable changes in the diagnosis, treatment, and survival rate for cancer in that time. Dr. John Ceferin is, you might say, an American Cancer Society lifer. He is the CEO, has been CEO of the Cancer Society for 21 years. He's been involved with it since 1972. He joins us in his office. Dr. Ceferin, welcome. Good to have you, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's an exciting time for the American Cancer Society.
How close are we to vaccines, since we're talking about different diseases here, vaccines or other preventive medicines for cancer, looking into the future?
We're so close that we've got some. So just literally within the last 24 hours, the World Health Assembly, the 66th World Health Assembly, has announced a plan, and one of the indicators is to increase the number of people who get vaccinations for the human papillomavirus, which is a major cause of cervical cancer. We're in the era of targeted therapies. In the old days, chemotherapy was cytotoxic drugs. They made the patient very sick. You try to give them enough to kill the cancer, but not the patient. It's a whole new era where we have targeted therapies and things like vaccinations that can keep people from ever getting the cancer in the first place.
One of the questions about that, though, has been the expense, because we have insurance policies that are covering less and less while the costs continue to rise. Are people going to be able to afford these therapies?
Well, that's a very important question, and it is a difficult time. There's no question but what some brand new drugs are so expensive that they price people out of the market. However, I'm optimistic about the future for the following reason, and that is with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, various preventive things are mandatory to be covered. And as these new preventions come along, I think that will force the price down, but the volume will make up for it. We've made so much progress that when I'm asked what keeps me awake at night, it's not, will the American public continue to support us? It's most cancer suffering and most cancer deaths in America today are needless based on what we know today.
You mentioned the Affordable Care Act. There is a drive to repeal it. You're not a political organization, but you have taken stands on areas of public policy. If the Affordable Care Act is repealed in any part, would that make it more difficult for people to afford the therapies we've been talking about for the future?
I think it probably would. I think it is inevitable that we will build out a new and better healthcare system, whatever we wish to call it. It would be difficult to build one as bad as the one we just left. And so I'm optimistic. It isn't going to be easy. It's such a huge bill and so complicated that there are bound to be bumps in the road, but they can be fixed.
What would be your recommendations if you could write a prescription? I mean, you're a PhD, not an MD, but if you could write a prescription, what would be the ways that would be the most urgent to fix it?
I think without any question that the new healthcare system has to be built around the centerpiece of prevention. The number one health, disease, and disability threat of the 21st century is cancer and non-communicable diseases. The good news is we know a lot about what to do about them, but we have to take action now. And so we're saying let's finish the fight against cancer, and we can't do that by being quiet. We got to make noise and take action.
You mentioned mandates. Are they for you an essential part of any prevention program that would be not just for kids, but for anybody?
Yes, I think it's so important that we recognize that we have to have everybody covered. I think a very important decision was made by policymakers long ago, and that was we are not going to have just a public healthcare system, that it was going to be a private-public mix. And once you make that decision, then it's important to find ways in which everybody gets covered, because we know that our biggest threat right now is disparities.
On the question of research, there have been some incidents, not necessarily in cancer, but in all sorts of medical research, where the research was funded by some of the companies that would benefit from it. How concerned are you about that? And is that something that is going to become more of an issue in the future?
I think we're much better today in terms of transparency and reporting conflicts of interest. One of the things that the American Cancer Society has been very proud of is that we are independent of the government, and we are independent of the private sector. And so we can actually say, here's the best evidence, and here's what we think is in the best interest of the person facing cancer. I've seen in just the last few years, I think, a much improved disclosure of any potential conflicts of interest, and that allows the person reviewing the results to determine whether that conflict of interest was too significant or not.
how do you screen for conflicts of interest? Because you get results, reports, studies all the time. How do you vet them?
Well, we have a whole process for establishing various, for example, screening guidelines. And we make sure that we have true experts around the table and that they report any conflicts if they have them. We try to avoid any of them. And our record, I think, is about as good as anybody's, is avoiding any place where it would appear that that panel had been co-opted because they've got people who've already made up their mind and don't want to look at the evidence. So we're a very evidence-based organization, have been for at least a half a century, and we'll stick with that.